League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com. Well, Damon, it feels right to be talking about motor racing on Easter Monday.
How's that work?
The first race meeting I ever went to was the F2 meeting at Thruxton. I think it was 1980. For a lot of British racegoers, it was an annual trip, wasn't it, to go and see tomorrow's F1 stars. I think that year, 1980, was won by Derek Warwick. You must have been to lots of Easter Monday race meetings with the old man.
I probably did. It would have been probably under sufferance. I wasn't particularly into motor racing when I was very young. It was just something that we did. It wasn't like motor racing for me, Formula One was something that I was attracted to. It was something I was born in. And so if we were to go somewhere, I'm trying to think, it probably would have been somewhere like Brands Hatch, wouldn't it? But anyway, yes, definitely. Racing on the Easter weekend was the done thing. But I remember going to see the transatlantic motorcycle races. That was the Easter weekend was, for me, when I first got into motor racing. I got in through the motorcycles. So motorcycles were my thing. Yeah, I seem to remember them racing on Easter weekends, yes.
At Brands Hatch?
Yeah, I think it was at Brands Hatch, yeah.
And we occasionally have an Easter Day Grand Prix, don't we? So it's not unusual at all. But anyway, as it is this week, we are at home and we're talking to you on F1 Nation. It is, of course, Damon Hill and Tom Clarkson with you this week. And why don't we start by throwing it back to last week in Melbourne? I mean, what a weekend that was. The weather wasn't any better than it was in the UK. What are your reflections of that weekend, Damon?
I thought it was encouraging, I should say, because I just saw that it looked like some people were starting to sort their cars out. They were trying to sort out, well, Mercedes was seemingly making some progress in the inroads to bring some challenge to Red Bull. But these early races can be misleading, and we sort of, our heads were in our hands a little bit after Bahrain, and then things got a little bit more interesting at Saudi, I thought. And I thought I saw signs of the Mercedes particularly having made a leap forward after the Friday. The car just looked completely different on the Saturday, and it sort of continued right through to Melbourne. And I don't know if people remember, but when they showed the onboards last year, you got used to this blimmin' bouncing. It just sounded awful. The cars, as they got towards the end of the straight, they were doing this scraping noise, this kind of oscillation, which was famously the big problem. By the way, why is it called porpoising?
Because is that how porpoises swim through the water? They sort of go up and down,
they do,
up and down.
But it's not called dolphining, because you can't, basically, you can't say dolphining.
The way you asked the question made me think you've got an answer to
it. Well, it occurred to me that, why did they choose a porpoise? Because people will usually say a dolphin, but you can't say dolphining. It's impossible. You try it. Anyway,
it was the inging. The inging doesn't work, so it had to be...
You can say porpoising, but you can't say dolphining.
many of the drivers just call it bouncing, don't they? Probably for that reason.
Yeah, yes. So it was, but it had this awful soundtrack. The guy was jumping up and down, and this scraping noise coming from the back of the car. Anyway, that's gone. It's hardly noticeable at all.
Are you talking about the Mercedes specifically or in general?
All of them seem to have cracked this problem. They seem to be getting there with setup. And they start to control the aerodynamics, or they're changing the fundamental setup. And I think that Fernando Alonso's come out and said something interesting, which is that he feels that we're going to now start to see, as we get back to Europe, when people can more effectively bring modifications, they've had a bit of a time. This is not like the summer break. They don't shut the factory down. There has not been any racing. There's time for people to take a breath, produce parts and improvements to their cars. And if they have space in their wind tunnel allocation, then we might start to see some real changing of the order, the competitiveness relative to Red Bull. I'm not saying Red Bull aren't going to carry on. But anyway, does that answer the question? Because I've talked for quite a long time on this one. I've forgotten what the question was.
Well, you were talking about Mercedes, and then the lack of bouncing, porpoising, dolphin-inging is a really good point. I think helped, of course, by the ride heights going up by 15 mil this year. But I worry that the Mercedes performance was track specific, because for whatever reason, they suddenly got that car into the right window in Q3 on Saturday. Cold conditions, a very smooth track surface, and suddenly it came alive when others didn't come alive. And let's not forget that the Red Bull had been more than a second a lap faster in Saudi just 2 weeks earlier in the race than any other car on the grid. So while I think Mercedes definitely got into the window, we did see them get that car into the window last year. Remember the Spanish Grand Prix? I think we all came away from that race when, you know, Lewis, I think, had to come from the back after an issue early on. I can't quite remember what it was, but he charged through the field. George Russell, very competitive, dicing with Max Verstappen. And we thought, wow, this Mercedes concept is something special. We then went to the next race and it was nowhere. So they've now got to prove to us that they can do it race after race, and we haven't seen them do it race after race yet this year. And then they're bringing all these changes to Baku, or so we're led to believe.
Yeah, so I think for the benefit of our listeners, I think that it's worth pointing this out. Bahrain, although it was very hot in the daytime sessions, the track temperature does cool off. Very abrasive, hard working circuit. So the track temperature, the tire temperature is a big issue, because the next race we go to is Saudi, less abrasive track, and it's a night race. So there is a tyre temperature and the tyre durability anomaly, let's say, for these races. They were unusual in that sense. So when we get to Europe and we do daytime stuff, it's going to be interesting to see whether the warm track temperatures and maybe slightly softer tyre, Pirelli bringing a slightly more stickier tyre that isn't as durable, might have an influence. I mean, my suspicion is if you went to a circuit that was a tyre eater, that Red Bull might be better off than most again.
So Melbourne, front limited, and by that we mean, you know, that's where the more energy has been put through the front axle, the front tyres, than the rear. And then we go to Baku in a few weeks' time, which is all about the rear axle and getting that power down. And every time we've been at that kind of a racetrack this year, the Red Bull has dominated. But it'll be interesting to see what these upgrades do. What I found very refreshing about Melbourne was that Merck have lost none of their strategic prowess, given that James Vowles has now left the team and he's team principal of Williams. It was interesting to see them being so proactive and aggressive on the strategy in Melbourne. Of course, George Russell making that pit stop, and without any of the red flags, Toto Wolff thinks he could have challenged for the win. I don't actually agree with him. I think the Red Bull had the legs of everybody last week, but for Mercedes to be so aggressive and so on it from a strategic point of view proves that, you know, James Vowles has gone. He was their head strategist, but they managed to fill the void very effectively, and they're still a very slick, brilliant racing team. And I think that was very encouraging, so that when Mercedes get their car together, whether it's after they've changed the concept, whether they manage to hone the current concept, they're going to be able to take the fight to Red Bull. I'm absolutely convinced of it. They've lost none of their edge despite a difficult 2022.
The thing about Melbourne, to point out again, was the shoe was on the other foot a little bit, wasn't it? Because Mercedes had the option. They had two drivers threatening. Max. And so, but Max was all alone because he'd lost Sergio. Sergio was down the back with his own battles. And so they couldn't do this game where you go, okay, well, one of our guys is going to do one thing and the other guy's going to do the other thing. So now you're covered. The guy at the front isn't got the option of the luxury, let's say, of choosing his tire choice. So he's sort of stuck with whatever the guy who's newest to him has got. So that was interesting that they had got that option. They played that card. And you're right, I think they were on it. I think Mercedes were very threatening in the sense that they're tactically they were astute and they were using both their drivers and they had the luxury of having two extremely fast, brilliant drivers in their team. So that gives us a strength to them. I'm not saying that Sergio's not. I'm saying that in that particular race, Sergio had his issues in qualifying and was out of the frame. So things will get really interesting if you get Sergio back up the front and you've got two Mercedes or, you know, let's not forget Ferrari, they will sort this out. Somehow they've got to find out what they're doing wrong. I mean, they're not that bad. You know, they shouldn't be where they are, but so it's conceivable that they could find a way forward and join the fray. And then it becomes really interesting when you've got races where teams choose to put drivers on different strategies. And it can always be immensely frustrating to drivers, particularly if they're in the latter stages of a championship, because a team might say something which is detrimental. So this is what happened with Charles Leclerc, obviously, at Ferrari, where, you know, he was not given preference, or he was given the wrong strategy, or the strategy that benefited or covered the team from a competitive point of view. But it actually, from his point of view, put him at a disadvantage to his teammate, because, gosh, you got this lovely contradiction in our sport where you have two championships going on at the same time and the teams run everything. So the drivers have very little control. And this is why you have Max is so forceful. And I've heard a similar thing coming from George Russell as well, which is he's very forceful. You might even say Carlos Sainz and Ferrari. They direct to the team. And of course, Fernando Alonso. You know, these drivers, they direct the team from the cockpit. They can swing it. You know, if the team is not bothered either way, then, you know, it is possible to get what you want for your strategy for a particular race. But you have to think quickly.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I'm fascinated by the teammates at Mercedes, George Russell, Lewis Hamilton, in that George, I think, is a lot more outspoken this year, not only about his own team. Remember last week he came out accusing Red Bull of sandbagging. They don't want to reveal their true pace because they're terrified of regulations being changed against them. Of course, the FIA can only change the regulations mid-season on safety grounds, but still, you know, I think the team's... George is implying that Red Bull are living in fear that something's going to happen to slow them down. But also within the team, intra-team battle between him and Lewis Hamilton. In the press conference after qualifying, they'd qualified second and third in Melbourne, Max, of course, on pole. And every time a question was posed to both of the Mercedes drivers, Lewis was quite happy for George to answer the question first. He almost became the spokesperson for the team in that press conference. And I was interested as to why Lewis was happy to just sit back and let that happen. I don't know whether he's sort of keeping his powder dry. And I don't know how you racing drivers work, Damon, but is he trying to sort of give him a sort of false hope of being the dominant person and then he's going to really hit him hard where it matters most on the stopwatch later on? I don't know what his thought process was, but it was interesting anyway to observe that he very much let George be the man.
You don't know how us racing drivers work, Tom. How many years have you been doing this? You do know, and you've interviewed more racing drivers than I have, probably. I mean,
okay, well, it's all mind games, isn't it?
We're competitive and we kind of political as well, in that you have to be aware of, let's say, rising forces or rising empires, let's say, or, you know, and within the team. there is going to be, George has to work very hard. He has to make himself a valued asset of the team. And he's obviously doing that really well. But at the same time, he's the one that has to do all the hard work. I think Lewis doesn't have to. They know what they've got with Lewis. And they know that given half a sniff of a chance, Lewis is going to be back on top form, you know, and can deliver those extraordinary races. They know that George can do that too, but he has yet to prove all that. So I think Lewis is very good. He'll have sussed this out, and he'll be sitting there thinking, well, okay, I'll let you do all the hard work, George, because, you know, it's exhausting doing all this, apart from anything else. You know, he's also, what is he, the director of the GPDA or the president or the, anyway, so he's got a big workload, George. He's taken on quite a lot. But I think Lewis, his strategy has always been to remove as many distractions as possible and leave time for downtime and clarity and stuff like that. So I think he tends to, in the last few years, even with Valtteri, Lewis has taken a kind of what appears to be kind of a slightly relaxed approach to the start of the season and then lets things unfold. And then eventually when he sees an opportunity, then he starts to step on the gas and then disappear into the distance.
Which we saw a little bit in Melbourne, although it is 3-0 to George Russell in qualifying in that Mercedes battle. 2-1 to Max Verstappen against Sergio Perez at Red Bull. And at Ferrari, it's 3-0 to Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, maybe we can talk about that, you know, the arrival of the younger, faster driver, because you will know that this has happened a lot in the past. You know, when Niki Lauda had Prost arrive, or there, let's say, the younger driver, the older, more experienced driver is faced with the speed of a young arrival in the team, they've got an option. They can get depressed about it, or they can, you know, throw their hands up in the air and say it's all over, or they can devote their energies to making sure that the outcome in the race is actually the thing that matters. And so they may give up a little bit in qualifying, except in their late 30s, they can no longer do those absolutely absurd kind of transcendental laps that they used to be able to do when they were in their 20s, and they can focus on getting somewhere in the race.
Were you slower at 39 than you were age 33?
When you say slower?
Over one lap.
I think you do things when you're younger. I can remember, for example, I was given an opportunity to test a motorbike, and I would have been 20 years old. And this guy gave me this bike to try out. I just remember flying around this track, and then the bike was trying to escape from underneath me. And part of my brain was going, why is a bike trying to get away from me? Nothing was done consciously at all. It was just simply, I want to go this fast, and you're coming with me. And as you get older, you've had a lot more experiences. Maybe you've had some crashes. Maybe it's gone wrong. Then you kind of, your brain goes, okay, now I need to be more circumspect maybe than before. I wonder whether that is just a little bit of a factor when you start to get later on in your career that you go, well, the last thing I want to do now is stick it in the tyres over there. You know, how many times you've seen the really fast guys, they spend their first half a season crashing, you know, to use the Spinal Tap metaphor, they're on 12, you know, they're not on 10. You can wind the volume back down from 12 to 10, but you can't get something that's at 8 up to 10, do you know? So if you've got a driver who needs to go faster, they're not fast. They get the pressure on them. They try to go faster and then they crash. Or you get the other guys who go way too fast and you have to slow them down. They're the Sennas, Schumachers and that.
It's possible to slow someone down, whereas it's actually impossible to make a slower driver go faster, isn't it?
Yeah, they reach their ceiling. That's it. George is, you know, super quick. And he's reveling in his, you know, the early part of his career, and he's got this speed. I don't know if Lewis has acknowledged that he can't match that, or I'm sure he will do eventually. But I mean, it's possible that instinctive, unconscious speed is starting to leave him. You know, it does happen.
If that's the case, then we'll see him be stronger in races than in quali, which is actually what we saw in Melbourne, isn't it? But hey, sample of one. I don't believe Lewis for a second is thinking he's slower than George Russell over one lap.
These guys do not lose what it is they know how to do. Those days are rarer and they are harder to conjure up. You know, you have to sometimes be patient and wait for everything to come together. And of course, Formula One, any sport really doesn't wait long. You know, so the young guys, they flare up quickly, but sometimes they can be erratic. You know, but George is very, actually, of those types. He's incredibly... I think Silverstone was a rash move that resulted in Zhou Guanyu's accident. I think he's occasionally done something rash. We saw Valtteri Bottas, the overtake on Valtteri Bottas was a bit ill-judged in Imola when they both got taken out. So he's had those impatient kind of moments, but he's of that type. He's much more reliable, less prone to crashing, less prone to making mistakes than many of them.
Also, Damon, it's his fifth year in Formula One. You know, you'd already won the world championship by the time you'd been in Formula One as long as
you. Yeah, indeed, yeah.
But only your fourth season of Formula One.
I was 35, 6 before when I won the world championship. I'd learned all my mistakes had been done, a lot of my mistakes had happened out of the public eye, let's say in the junior formulas when I was on my way up. So, yeah, but, you know, the number of years in Formula One now, these things are, how many years is it that Max has been there? 7 years or something? Ridiculous. I mean, my entire career was only 7 years long. I don't think I can compare my career to anyone else. But the point is, there's a maturity thing that comes into play, which is to do with literally just growing up. And then there's an F1 experience thing. So you can measure people in terms of their F1 maturity, let's say. You know, I think to throw someone in age 17 and expect them to win a world championship, if they had a car dominance capable of doing that, then I'm sure it's possible. I mean, Lewis very nearly won his first season in Formula One.
Well, I was about to say, wasn't it? If McLaren had put their weight behind Lewis, I think he could have won that 2007 season. And that overtake around the outside of Fernando Alonso in his very first race in Melbourne was proof that he was more than ready. But crucially, I remember Martin Whitmarsh, who was running McLaren at the time, forcing Lewis to do a second season of Formula 3. And I remember him being very frustrated by that, saying, no, I'm ready. Come on, let's go up to GP2. And they made him do it. And I think that extra experience just helped him be ready for that moment in 2007. He wouldn't have been quite as ready, I think, if he'd only had that one season in F3. So it's, as you say, it's all about experience, isn't it?
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I've got a question for you about Ferrari. They're now 97 points behind Red Bull after just 3 races. You can translate that one of 2 ways. Either absolute disaster, Ferrari in all sorts of trouble, or do you say, actually, the pressure's off their team principal, Fred Vasseur, now because the championship's gone already and now it's just all about making progress rather than going for the championship. So the pressure's off and he can just make the changes he wants to make, you know, not be governed by the need to win every race because they haven't done that. And, you know, yes, they've already submitted a petition to review Carlos Sainz's 5-second penalty in Melbourne, but whether that works for them or not, I just feel that in a funny kind of way, the position Ferrari are in now will actually help Vasseur in the longer run.
Can I just say, on that Carlos Sainz thing, the Carlos Sainz 5-second penalty in a race that didn't exist, that affected it, affected the outcome of the race that happened afterwards. I am still scratching my head over that. I think he does have a point. I mean, maybe what they should have done is, instead of giving him a 5-second penalty in a race that didn't exist, is give him some points. You know, they could have that option to give drivers endorsements standing on their license. How can it have affected a race that it didn't affect? Because actually, it didn't affect Fernando Alonso. He was back, put back where he was. But if he'd taken Fernando out of the race, then definitely the future race would have been affected.
But what do you do about the 2 Alpines that crashed out in the race that didn't actually exist? Do you have to reinstate them if you go back? You know, so where do you draw the line?
I think it's something that I've found difficult to work out the answer to, and I'm sure that that's the position that the race directors would be in as well. He said, okay, now what do we do? It was an extraordinary head-scratcher. The whole of the last few laps and the reactions have been mixed. I mean, in classic F1 style, there are 2 reactions. Oh, this is a joke, you know, Formula 1 is nonsense because they don't know what to do in the general press. And then there are people who go, this is fantastic because it is part of the enjoyment of the sport, is this the complexity of it. and that it creates situations that it is anyone's guess as to what's going to happen next. And I kind of like that about it.
Yeah. It's very Formula One.
Very
the whole
Formula
thing.
One, yeah. But you did ask me about Ferrari, didn't you? About Fred Vasseur.
Yeah. So is the pressure off? Is it, in a way, does the current predicament help him make the changes he needs to make away from the limelight, if there is such a thing in Maranello?
Did you mean because he can say, he can hold his hand up and say, well, listen, don't blame me, I just got here. I can't.
Well, I think he can hide behind that, absolutely. But also, you know, sometimes you might have to take a more conservative approach if you're fighting for a championship. You know, do we pit now? Do we take the aggressive strategy? No, we're going to just mirror what Red Bull are doing or something. Whereas now the championship's gone, race wins, blah, whatever. Let's just make this a better racing team. And he can do that now without the pressure of what happens on a Sunday afternoon.
Okay, Tom, this is the bit I love. Let's hear the burning questions that all the listeners have about Formula One. We've had some really interesting ones, some left field ones, which I like.
Yeah. Actually, look, a quick shout out for anyone who still doesn't know about this. This is your chance to pose a question to me, to Damon, of course, to Natalie when she's on, to Pedro de la Rosa. You've got to record a voice note and send it to us at the following email address, f1nation@f1.com. All right? And then we'll do our best to answer. And we've got, what is it, 4 questions coming your way today? Why don't we have our first one?
It's Carly here from Bangor in County Down. My question is about Max Verstappen. What do you think it is that makes him just such an epic driver? I know he has a really strong car this season, but what qualities, what personal qualities does Max have that enables him just to get the very most out of the car? Thanks, bye.
Well, obviously, he's bloody quick, right? That is a given. But I have never met a racing driver who is so hungry for success as Max Verstappen.
I think that's an important component, isn't it? The hunger for success. In other words, what we call competitiveness or desire, burning desire to win. That's a mindset I think is probably key. Similar to Senna, similar to Schumacher, similar to many of the guys who've won in our sport or in an end sport. But there's a kind of ruthlessness to it as well, which is also, I think most people find it difficult to relate to that, because in normal life, that is regarded as being selfish and it's regarded as being unattractive. But then it's a totally appropriate mindset for competing in a sport where the objective is to win. The objective is, you know, is not to do well, is not to play nicely, it's to win. And so that is what he has. And where did he get that from? I'm sure, but his mother is also competitive and a very successful karting lady. But Jos, racing from one, his dad, has made sure that Max, as he was growing up, was left in no uncertain terms, aware of that this is not worth doing it just for a bit of fun. You know, if you're going to go to Formula One, you either have to want to win or have to win.
He doesn't just want to win. He wants to destroy the people around him, his closest competitors. And a classic case was Saudi. He started the race 15th. He drove a brilliant Grand Prix to finish second. And yet he was really disappointed after the race and came out with the line, I'm not here to finish second. You know, so many other people would have thought that's a great weekend. Look at Perez last weekend in Melbourne. He starts in the pit lane. He comes through to, what was it, 5th? And he was really happy. I can't imagine Max Verstappen being happy with 5th, even from a pit lane start. His mentality is unique. Yes, Lewis Hamilton is hugely competitive. Of course he is. Ditto Charles Leclerc. But there's a ruthlessness about Max that I don't see in the other guys. Just a serial winner. He could, for as long as that Red Bull is competitive, Max is just going to keep winning. And he won't, he's one of those guys, he won't get bored of winning. The more he wins, the more he wants it.
You know, we hear this phrase a lot these days. It's about the journey.
Do you think he's enjoying the journey? Actually, I do think he is much calmer now than he was 9 years ago when he first came into Formula One. Just, I suppose that just comes with familiarity of the environment you're in, but he is very calm.
He is remarkable in that sense.
When I look at Max, I don't see a weakness. I think he's strong everywhere. He's quick over one lap. I think he's racecraft is really good. I think the way he looks after his tyres is brilliant. I think he's able to read a race brilliantly. In fact, the more I look at Max, the more he reminds me of Fernando Alonso. Is he the fastest guy over one lap? He's brilliantly fast. He's certainly in the top three on the grid. But is he the fastest guy? Same car, Charles Leclerc or him? Not sure. But who is the fastest over a race? I actually think there is no one better than Max Verstappen now. I think lap, he's like a metronome. Lap after lap, he just bangs it in. And he's combined that with a ruthless attitude towards overtaking. And you've got yourself a serial winner. He's incredibly impressive. And I think his mentality is very similar to Fernando Alonso. And it doesn't surprise me when they each come out praising the other in the media, which they do quite a lot now, because I think they can see a little bit of the other in themselves. And Max is that Fernando Alonso of 2005-06. That's where we're at right now with him. And how good can he get? How can he chip away at just making himself better? And I think he does have that desire to get better as well. So it's quite frightening, actually, to think how good he could become.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll get better. I think you're right, Tom. I think he has shown more maturity and measured in his application of his formidable talents in races. You know, he knows when to play, when to twist and when to stick. You know, he can push when he needs to. It's no good just going, there's no need to go flat out the whole time everywhere. He's always got it in his back pocket if he needs it. So yeah, but a very accomplished. And yes, the sky is the limit. And I mean, God, it could be eight more titles.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Let's go on to our next one now.
Hi all, this is Anton from London. It's obviously been a really interesting start to the season for Lance Stroll, where he's shown us plenty that we didn't know about him already. But how high do you think his ceiling is in this Aston Martin?
Well, Anton, I think he's a really good racing driver, and we've talked about it on this pod already this year, but we learned so much about him when he was coming back from that training accident that happened just before testing. We saw a determination, a steely determination in him then, which I don't think we'd seen before. I think we'd all assumed it had been red carpet treatment from the moment he first drove a go-kart because of the wealth of his father. But no, we saw that this is a guy who really wants it. We got perhaps a glimpse of it too in the wet in Turkey a few years back when he got pole position. You know, you don't put it on pole in those sorts of conditions unless the desire is right there. And I think particularly in those sorts of conditions, I think Lance is really good. And in the right car, he can win races. And I know Fernando Alonso is now his teammate, but, you know, Fernando does go out of his way to big him up and say the guy is giving great feedback. Even when he wasn't at the pre-season test, he was joining all the calls via Zoom, giving his thoughts to both Felipe Drugovich, who was driving the car, and Fernando, of course, and just contributing. And yeah, so I do think he's good enough to win races in the right car. The Aston is not yet the right car to be winning races if a Red Bull finishes. But in a race where there's a bit of jeopardy, and there has been quite a lot of jeopardy in the races where he's finished on the podium so far, Baku 2017, jeopardy, Monza 2020, jeopardy, and of course the outer loop when Sergio Perez won in Sakhir, also that year, again, more jeopardy. But he can win races. That's my feeling anyway. What about you, Damon?
I think the question has been whether Lance has been 100% committed to this career in his mind. You know, I get the sense that sometimes he's felt, I don't know if I want to be doing this. No, and until he makes that decision that this is 100% what he wants to be doing, then I think that his comeback after the broken wrist thing was evidence that he wasn't going to let a step back deprive him of his opportunity to get his hands on that car and race it. So I think that was a good indicator of his desire to compete. Was it when he got published and he said, I love this job or something like that?
He did, yeah.
He said, I love this job. You know, it's the ups and downs that are difficult, isn't it? It's the down bits where you're kind of going, oh, God, I don't know. And maybe I don't have to be doing this because it's no secret that Lance's, you know, family is very well off and maybe he doesn't have to. He could get a job in the business, maybe. But he likes his outdoor sports. He likes his skiing. And of course, famously, was it mountain biking? He broke his wrists. So he's an outdoor active type. And I think he's a very good skier as well. So talented. But this has to be it, to the exclusion of everything else, Formula One. And that's where I think we're starting to see a little bit of that in Lance. You know, that this is now a thing that he wants in his life. He wants to show that he can cut it at the very highest level in a sport like this, in Formula One. And I think that love of what you're doing is very important because it makes you enthusiastic. It makes you give extra time to it. And so, yeah, I think he's getting much more experience too. So he's becoming quite a valuable asset in terms of himself.
Damon, let's break this down. Would Lance Stroll, if his dad wasn't mega wealthy, is he good enough to warrant a place in Formula One?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the version of him that we're seeing now, we haven't seen as much strength in depth on the Formula One grid as we're seeing this year, maybe ever. Because I think Logan Sargeant is a great addition. You know, he was very quick when he was alongside Oscar Piastri in Formula 3. And he's replaced Nicholas Latifi, who was a pay driver. Whereas, and I think Lance is, he deserves his place. And now he just needs to get some wind in his sails, get some momentum, and it'll come.
I think the more interesting question for me is, what is someone's ultimate potential? I think Lance has got the natural ability. I don't think, as he stands today, he is a future world champion, standalone on his own merits, in the same way that Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton are. He'd be knocking spots off of Fernando Alonso if he was that person. If you want to go to the next level, then that's where you've got to start doing. Speaking from my own experience, I had other levels that I had no concept of until I really was forced into those situations and had to deliver. And I know that there's more potential in every driver than they realise. The question is, how do you untap that potential? And it takes an awful lot of commitment and an awful lot of sacrifice.
Well, I think we saw it with Lance on his pole position lap in Turkey. I think that was a surprise to pretty much everyone in the paddock, that level of performance.
Yeah, but it has to be maintained. It has to be sustained, doesn't it, over time. It's no good just the blip, the one-off event. So he'd have to make his ambition this year. To really get there, he'd have to set his goal as ending Fernando Alonso's career. Now, that sounds brutal, but that's what George Russell is trying to do. You know, that's what Nico Hülkenberg's trying to do with Magnussen. You have to establish yourself as the undisputed king, number one in that team.
All right, no easy task. But I still think he warrants a place in Formula One because there are only two or three Max Verstappens and Lewis Hamiltons, and you can still be a very good racing driver and deserve a place. And I think he's on that list.
Yeah, okay. If he really wants to know the answer, then he'd have to go and drive for a different team. Then he'd be able to escape all those issues. You know, he would sink or swim. Thanks, Anton, for that question. And, well, I think we've got some more, so keep them coming.
Hi, it's Brendan from Virginia. You guys travel all over, but I was wondering if there was a place you really love to go to the most, you know, where they have great food, experiences, the culture, racetrack itself. I'm hoping to go to a race one day, fingers crossed. So any tips would be really great. Thanks so much. Bye.
Brendan, yes. Where do we like going to? Well, we're very lucky, aren't we? We go all over the place and we get the chance to sample these cultures and these countries. And you know what? I don't really want to answer this because I don't really want to say that this is the one I prefer above all the others, because what I like is the difference. I like the variety. Who'd have thought of going to Baku? We didn't. And I've been to Baku. It's quite interesting. And I saw a fantastic documentary about Azerbaijan by a famous historian woman on telly. And she got a bit further away than the racetrack. And it does look an absolutely stunningly beautiful country. So lots more to explore. We don't get the time to do quite all of that. But going to China, Singapore, you know, Australia. When I first went to Japan, I found it exhausting. And maybe it's because of the jet lag, but it was such a busy place and it seemed very industrial. But what a fascinating country that is. And I want to see more of that. And I didn't. I hadn't had a chance yet to go and see more of that.
But even when you were racing, you didn't stop off and spend time in Tokyo or...
Yeah, Tokyo.
Climb
yeah.
Mount Fuji or...
I didn't climb Mount Fuji. No, I haven't been to Mount Fuji. I haven't been to Kyoto and I want to see that. And it seems mad. You go all this way and you don't see the key points.
We're always in such a rush. I keep saying it to you. We are always in such a rush and we should spend time. I also think, come on, I'm going to stick up for Brendan here. He's saying, Hill, stop sitting on the fence. If you're not going to give me your favourite destination, give me your top three in no particular order.
It's a hot summer's day, okay? It's a lovely English summer. Get a tent or a caravan.
Okay, so we're at Silverstone suddenly.
Yeah, I could find your place in the have a great weekend camping at Silverstone.
You do actually do that, don't you? You stay at Silverstone each year.
Yes, well, I get a very expensive motorhome type caravan and just put it in the BRDC. campsite, and I sleep next to Lewis Hamilton. I very rarely see him, I sleep next to him. I mean, in the caravan. The caravan's next to it. So
yeah, does his music keep you awake? Does he? I don't know. Go on. What's it like being in the caravan next?
I haven't heard anything. No, yeah, he's a very quiet camper. He keeps himself to himself. He's a kind of a very shy creature. He might come out like a dormouse at night or something. Anyway, that's Silverstone. I think that's worth putting on the list.
Brendan, I want to say Austin because obviously you're from the US and I hope if you're going to go to a Grand Prix, you go there because I think brilliant racetrack, exciting city, great places to eat. But if I were to give you my three favourites, they all begin with M. Melbourne, Monaco, Montreal.
I'm going to add another one.
Go on, give me another M.
Mexico City.
Well, Mexico, yeah, it's great. Vibrant. I mean, God, what a place. But I mean, Melbourne, Monaco, Montreal. Melbourne, because it's a stunning city. I love being in Australia. Monaco, because it's about as unique as you can get winding those cars through that principality. And Montreal, because the vibe. It's any city that gets overtaken by the race, as in just becomes consumed by the race, is a great place to go. And those, the three M's are like that. Silverstone, it's not a city, but it obviously gets completely overtaken by the race. And maybe Vegas.
That's not an M, doesn't begin with an M, does it? We haven't been to Vegas yet, so we can't judge it. All we can do is say it's almost certainly going to be the biggest show on earth in terms of Formula One.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And we've got time for one more. Let's have our last Ask the Nation question of the week.
Hi, guys. It's Russ Williams here from Guildford in the UK. My question, my F1 Nation question is regarding Mercedes. Obviously, we've seen the car this year not be that great. It wasn't last year either. The drivers and the team will say they have confidence it'll get better and they know what to do to improve it. But I just wondered if you're really sure about that, because I know Mercedes have lost some really good people over the last couple of years. And I just wondered what you think about their actual capability to make it better. They don't seem to know the right direction and how to make it work, or perhaps they do. But I'm just keen to see what you think. Thanks, guys.
Russ, thanks for that. I don't think Mercedes' problems are anything like as bad as they want us to believe. Do you remember after the first race in Bahrain when Toto Wolff, wrote a message to the fans? He was very negative in the media after the race, as was Lewis, saying that he had no feeling for the car, he was sitting too far forward, all of those things. But ultimately in Formula One, the stopwatch never lies. And look at the last two races. The gap to Red Bull in Australia was, what, 0.2 of a second in qualifying? I think that's what George Russell was behind. And it was the same as that in Saudi. Admittedly, that was Sergio Perez on pole and he made a mistake on his final Q3 run and there was no Max Verstappen involved. But you know, a car that's only 0.2 of a second off a Red Bull is not a bad racing car. So for me, the starting point isn't that bad. Can they improve it? Yes, absolutely they can. It's just a question of how much. And they're talking about changing the concept, and they've had this period between Australia and Baku to do that. Toto Wolff is talking very positively about the gains that they've made, but equally no one else is standing still. Everyone else is going to be using this gap to improve as well. So in conclusion, I think they will close the gap, they will win races, but I can't see them beating Red Bull over the balance of the season.
Let's be a little bit optimistic and say that Red Bull hit a glass ceiling. They've pretty much got the championship done and dusted, but they need to split the resources and make sure they don't overspend and then think about next year. There's nothing in the cost cap that says the money you spend this season has to be spent on this year's car. So as far as I'm aware, so basically the resources may decide to sacrifice some victories towards the end of the season in favour of investing in next year's car. So yeah, it may be that the others push and spend all of their resources unwisely on trying to beat Red Bull towards the end of the season. And that's another fascinating dimension, isn't it, to this new era, which is we don't know how it's going to pan out. We don't know how much it's going to work. But the theory is that, you know, that teams will catch up. You might have the situation with Aston Martin is winning races at the end of the season.
That's an interesting battle. So Mercedes are currently third in the Constructors' Championship, 9 points behind Aston Martin. Who comes out top of those two teams will be fascinating. I think I put my money on Mercedes, I think.
I would too. I still would put my money on Mercedes. I've been shocked and surprised by Aston Martin's speed, so maybe that's... This is the new paradigm, and we're not really, you know, we're not really adjusting our brains yet properly to how this is going to work. It's no good me saying I don't know, is it? I've got to say what I know. And what I know is we don't know anything just yet.
Well, look, thank you very much for your question, Russ. I hope we've gone some way to answering it for you. And thank you to everybody who sent their questions in. Quick reminder for those of you who want to get involved, a voice note and send it to the following email address, f1nation@f1.com. And we will answer some of your questions in future episodes. Now, let's check in with our F1 Fantasy League, the F1 Nation World Championship. If you haven't joined yet, you still can. Search for the league name or use the league code in the description of this episode. And after three rounds, the top three looks like this. In first, a team called Scuderia with four R's. Not sure how you say that. But they've got both Red Bull and both Aston Martin drivers in their team, along with Alfa Romeo's Zhou Guan Yu. Aston and Red Bull are their constructors, so that's a very strong team. In second place is Silverstone 2022. Well done to you guys. And in third, the brilliantly named Beans Means Science, who curiously do not have Carlos Sainz in their team. If you're not in the UK, that is a pun on an advertising slogan for a baked bean company. There are now nearly 900 teams in our league, and our team, F1 Nation Racing, is 275th. Top half of the table, we'll take that for now. Our team is currently Verstappen, Alonso, Perez, Piastri and Albon, with Red Bull and Aston Martin as constructors, but we will change that before Baku. And remember, you can start playing F1 Fantasy whenever you like, and it's totally free to play. Just search online for F1 Fantasy to sign up, then choose your constructors and drivers using a $100 million budget. Then join our league to compete against us and our listeners. Search for the F1 Nation World Championship. Well, Damon, it's been great to chat on Easter Monday. What are you up to for the rest of the day?
Preparing, I suppose, for the next exciting instalment of Formula One, which is coming up very shortly.
It is indeed. Well, look, thank you to everybody who is listening to the show, and we'll be back next Monday with some more fun and games. But for now,
this has been F1 Nation, produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda Racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.